I'm here in Tallaght County Council offices and I'm talking to Peter Clark. Peter, just a very interesting story in relation to Woodtown Park, but I'd like to know first a little bit about yourself. Where do you come from originally? Where are you?
Originally from Coleraine, County Derry. My father was from Dublin, or from Howth, and he was a medical doctor and had a practice up in Coleraine. And from 1948, I came to school down in Dublin, and I married a Dublin girl.
And that's how you got to Dublin? So
that's how I got to Dublin, in 1965.
Who did you marry?
I married Ethna Marsh, whose father owned Woodtown Park, and we met at, oh, where was it now? It's now the high school in Rathgar. I can't remember the name of the people in arm, but they had their family originally, the headmaster of the high school originally lived in Coleraine and was a master at the Coleraine Academical Institution. And we met frequently through the local drama club. Mm-hmm. He came to work down here and his family were running a dinner dance at the house, Dainham at Rathgar. And the old house, I think, is gone now. It was an old Bewley house.
Was it? Indeed?
Yeah. And we met there and we married in 1965.
Now, when you married in 1965, your wife's first name is
Ethna.
Ethna, yeah. Marsh. So this was this your first time knowing Woodtown Park?
Yes, definitely first time. I never knew of the existence before that. Though, I was at school at St. Columbus, which is just a few miles across the way from it. And I was, one way of getting out of extended homework in the evening was to the musical society. And we used to play classical gramophone records. And along came an elderly gentleman, tortly elderly gentleman, and his wife, who used to come in every so often and sit in, obviously by arrangement with the person who was running the society. And this turned out to be Mr. and Mrs. Marsh, eventually. I found out who it was. At the time, I didn't know. I didn't know where they lived.
Yeah.
But that was just a coincidence.
They were to be your father and father-in-law.
That's right. Yes, they were. Yeah.
On. And in 1965, what was Woodtown Park like? Or was it? It wasn't known as Woodtown Park then, was it?
Oh yes, it was. It became Woodtown Park around about 1900, which is another little story. But when I came on the scene in 1965, it was, I should go back to around about 1940. Arnold Marsh bought Woodtown in 1940 from a person called Day. And it was virtually unoccupied at the time. There was only somebody living in the lodge. As far as I know, the Day and the family, Mr. Patrick Day, was a farmer, horse breeder, and he only wanted was the land. He wasn't interested in the house, and he never lived there. Arnold bought the place in 1940. It was empty, and he was a retired teacher from Newtown School down in Waterford, and he wanted to supplement his income. He had a big house. Well, he got the idea, and the house was, he thought, ideal for separating up into flats. Mm-hmm. And he said, that'll give me an income. So at the same time, the Killikey house, further up the road, was being demolished or being sold. Lord Massey's house. And it was about taken over by the Land Commission. The house wasn't going to be used at all. So he quickly went up and snaffled a whole lot of bits and pieces, shutters, doors, anything he could lay his hands on, and divided up Woodtown Park with all the bits.
My goodness. So a lot of Lord Massey's house is mingled in with
in Woodtown,
Woodtown.
Yes.
Isn't
it
that
is,
interesting?
Yeah. So he divided up in flats and lived through the war years, supplemented also with income of him being a market gardener. Mm-hmm. and rambled on down in a pony and trap down to the market every week to sell his produce. So he was into a little bit of everything. And shortly after the war ended, he also went and became a teacher in the Department of Teaching in Trinity, which does the HDPED course.
Yeah.
And that also. But then later on, not too certain of the years, but he was invited or asked by the Society of Friends, because he was a Quaker family, both he and his wife were Quakers, to start up or to take over the Drogheda Grammar School, which at that time was running very, very downhill at the time. And he agreed to do that, and he went up to Drogheda Grammar.
Yeah.
And he leased or he rented out to somebody the house during the school terms.
Yeah, but that's interesting. But go back to Trinity again. He was head of the department there for teaching.
I don't know if he was the head, but he was certainly in the educational department in Trinity.
Yeah, that's interesting too. The grammar school came after that, didn't it?
It did, yes. Yeah. I'm not too certain exactly that the history. He has written his memoirs, in fact, which is very, very interesting.
But was he an interesting man?
Very interesting, yes. Very interesting. He knew a lot of people, and through his wife, they knew a lot of the artists in Dublin, mm-hmm. in Ireland. She did a certain amount of training over in Paris for a period as well, and knew all the well-known artists. And Woodtown is scattered with all her paintings at the moment.
So lived very much the high life?
No,
the time? Or live very, very...
very modestly.
Well, Quaker tradition would be, wouldn't it?
Would be,
very,
yeah.
Very, very modest way of
that's
living.
That's right, it would be. Yeah.
Wouldn't be showing off any grandeur.
No.
And so... And what denomination do you come from?
I'm Church of Ireland.
So yeah. Marrying into the Quaker tradition, was that any problem?
No, not at all, no. Nothing. No. We got married in a church town meeting house. A strange sort of setup for me. I didn't know what to expect, but it was okay. And we had the reception up in Woodtown. And it went off very well. And we then, Ethna and myself, then went to live down in Spring Hill Avenue, down in Black Rock. I bought a house down there. And it wasn't until Arnold Marsh died that we went moved up to Woodtown.
What year did he die? Sometime in the 70s?
Yeah, 17...
Sometime in the 70s, in any case. So yourself?
Myself and wife and three children at that time.
All moved into the
all
house.
Moved up. We first of all, we moved up into one of the flats, which was vacant at the time. And Mrs. Marsh then moved off into the big rooms, and we converted the butler's pantry into a little kitchen for her and everything. And we renovated our section, which was very run down.
Did you do that sympathetically, or did you just, you know, you probably didn't have a whole lot of money to work with, but...
Well, we sold a house. We had a little bit of money because we sold Spring Hill. And we eventually... we didn't. The only thing we ever did in a big way was we gutted out the kitchen completely. But the rest of it was just titivating painting and repairing damaged timber and that sort of thing. But that there was nothing. There was just mainly painting.
A lot of cosmetic work, yeah. And so there wasn't any great... It wasn't good condition.
The roof was in very, very good condition. Walls are good condition. But the house as a whole is... with a lot of damp in the basement, all right. But we never had any problems trying to get tenants. Tenants were always clambering, wanting... to obtain a place because it's very convenient to the city, even though only recently have we had public transport up the road. It's very convenient to the city of centre.
What about the grounds?
In total, originally there used to be 54 acres attached to it. Shortly before we moved up to Woodtown, before Arnold died, he sold 12 of those acres in the top field and donated the sale of the land to form an educational trust, which is still going. And houses now are built up there at the moment. So we're left with about 38 acres at the moment, which is used for grazing. We don't cultivate in any way.
Would that be dry cattle or?
Horses.
Oh, you use it for?
Horses, yes. We run our stables up there.
Mm-hmm. Riding school?
Not a riding school as such, no. We do have an arena there, but no, it's just purely what we call half livery. People come up every day to tend their horses, but we provide the bedding, the stables, the grazing, and hay, and that's just about it. Any supplementary feeding or exercising, the owners do it.
Have you taken a deep interest in the history of the house?
I have, yes. Quite a while ago. I haven't done much recently, but I did start it off about 25 years ago. And went down to the records office and went down to the registry of deeds to try and go back in time through the deeds and see who had owned the house. So I got down a little bit on it. I'm not satisfied that I know everything about it, though.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about the Marsh family. Can you trace back their...
Yeah.
What was Mrs. Marsh's maiden name?
Roberts.
And where did they come from?
Roberts were a building family, Appian Way. In fact, they built a lot of the houses in Appian Way, but they lived in one of those houses. The Roberts family I haven't traced back, but the Marsh I have. They originally started off in Dorking, in Surrey. And I think two of the brothers came over about 130 years ago, went over to Belfast when Belfast was beginning to grow up, and they ran a biscuit firm up there. Arnold Marsh's father was an architect up there, and Arnold's mother were the Walpoles, who came from Mount Melick in Westmeath, I think it is, or somewhere like down there, Midlands. And I don't know if there are any Marshes living up in Belfast at the moment. Quite a few of Arnold's brothers and sisters went over to England eventually. And Arnold then, in the 1920s, I think it was, late 20s, took over headmastership of the Newtown School down in Waterford, which was a Quaker school, mm-hmm. Still going.
And he started all that?
He didn't start it. It was going for quite a long time beforehand, but he took it over.
He took it over and kept it going.
Kept it going, yes. And it's still flourishing.
Yeah.
And even now.
What about the name itself? Woodtown Park. How many times did it change?
Was it just the once. As far as I can see through the registered deeds, it was always known as just pure Woodtown, mm-hmm. Nothing else. There's another house across the road which is known as Woodtown House. The townland is Woodtown.
Who lived there?
No, I can't remember offhand who lived there, but recently, well, in the last... 40, 50 years ago, Robert Graves lived there, the poet and author, for a short while. Then it came into the Guinness family. Guinness is of Luggalo. And he recently sold it and is going to be developed for building now. Unfortunately, the house itself is listed, so it can't be pulled down. And I think there is planning permission in the moment for a... the house to be retained and a community centre or a hotel or some such thing, and houses to be built in around it. But Woodtown, my records of Woodtown go back to around about 1790 or so. Originally it was just an ordinary Queen Anne farmhouse. The house is there at the moment, is not the original, it's being built on. to what it was originally.
So it was in the Queen Anne style prior to that?
That's the section that we live in at the moment, which is one side of the house. As far as I can see from the original maps, Taylor's maps and Rock's maps, is there, it was an L-shaped building. And you can actually, there is a drawing down in the National Archives, which shows the old entrance to the house, the wrought iron stairs going up, which would have gone into what we use as a bathroom now. But I have a copy here, which shows quite clearly the wrought iron staircase. The staircase is gone, of course, now. But
indeed, yeah. South County Dublin was indeed the place for the gentry to live, yeah. And with all the fine buildings, as well as the parklands and the manicured gardens, and all around this area, you have very fine houses, or you did have very fine houses. A lot of them built on now and and knocked, but high up in the hills, you know, looking down. Woodtown Park, it's raised up a bit, isn't it?
Yes. The land to the front of the house slopes away down towards Dublin, yes, it does.
With a commanding view. And
The trees have grown up, of course, to what it used to look like, but our vision from, we can still, from the upper stairs, still see Howth across the bay,
yeah,
which is a rather nice vista. But the trees, of course, have grown up, and it hides a certain amount of the Dublin city from us.
Yeah. What's extraordinary about the house when I was in it, I sensed a great feeling of it had its own character, its own atmosphere.
It does, yes.
Did you ever experience any ghosts or of the past?
No, not even any stories. Not at all, no. Yes, the house itself has been through quite a history from the days when George Grierson, who eventually became the King's printer, took over the house. And he had a very extensive farm running there, and I think Dalton and Ball in their histories of Dublin also mention the fact that he had a very fine farmland there and very well organized. And we've certainly found in the repairs and maintenance that we've done to the place very, very good drainage systems, or would have been, made out of stone and slate. And that was all done by, I'd say, Grierson when he first moved up there to run it as a farm.
Yeah. When the building changed then from the Queen Anne period style, you know, which was very square, to the early Georgian style, and that's the way it is today.
That's right, yeah. It hasn't changed since then at all. There's been no extensions or anything put on it or anything like that. The only work we're actually doing at this present time is to update the innards, to try and improve the standard of living at the moment. We're starting off in the basement at the moment.
Yes.
A lot of damp down there. We've had to put new drainages and new French drains around the house to try and get the damp away from the walls.
But Peter, other people that lived in this house, moving down through the years, in the 17th century, it was owned by who?
That I don't know, quite honestly. I think all the land was originally, at that time, was owned by the owner of Rathfarnham Castle, I think, at the time. But certainly the histories going back will tell you exactly who. I only know from roughly when George Grierson took over the place. That's all as far back as I've gone, really, in any detail. And he, at the Act of Union 1800, he then lost his job as the King's printer and ran into a spot of problems But because the cell Rathfarnham House, which is now was in the Loretto Convent, that's where his main house was. Woodtown was really treated only as a farm for him, and he eventually sold Rathfarnham House in 1821. But that's by that time he was in financial troubles, trying to. So he sold Woodtown on to a person called Cook Lucas.
Who was he now?
Now, George Grayson had a printing works in Parliament Street, right? Cook Lucas also had a haberdashery in Parliament Street, so they must have known each other, I'm sure. And the Lucases were farm owners, farmland owners up in West Meath, County Meath as well, and they took over. Now, of that period, I know nothing, because then along comes another chap called Henry Joy, about 1829, and he was a judge, a circuit court judge. He eventually became the Lord Chief Baron, the Right Honourable Baron Joy. And the Joys came from Belfast originally. His father and uncle, I think, I could be corrected on this, his father and his uncle started up the Belfast Newsletter way back in the 18th century. And they had printing works, and they also manufactured paper as well. And but I did go back into the Joy family a little bit, and there's quite a few of them in the legal business. But anyway, Judge Joy, he had his house in Henrietta Street as well, at the back of King's Inn. But he also had this Woodtown, which was known, in, as I found out in a book about judges at that time in the library, was known as Joy's Villa.
That's interesting.
Believe it or not.
Yes.
And whether that was just a nickname or whether it was
connected with judges,
I don't know.
Yes.
But anyway, it was Joy who expanded the house from the original Queen Anne farmhouse up into what that house is today. And he was a bachelor.
Well, he must have had a bit of money,
yes,
to go to upgrade and or to. But
I would like to find out whether it was through sentencing people in court that he was able to obtain labour for the house. Whether I'd ever able to do that or not, I don't know.
Yeah, but the building it is today, and as it was then,
Joy, Henry Joy. And he died in 1838, so he was only there for about 9 or 10 years. And he passed it on to his, because I found his will, passed it on to his sister, Harriet, who was a spinster as well. Right? With the provision that if she died without issue, but it passed on to their nephew, George, and his wife. And they at that time lived up in Ballymena. And they were the estate solicitors for the Adair estate. The Adairs owned virtually the whole of Ballymena.
It was almost a shame to have just one person live in this wonderful mansion.
Yes. Did find evidence because we found, when I started excavating up in the attic and insulating it, I found all the wires and little pulleys for the pull wires for alerting this to servants to the rooms. And we also found the box with the little wobbles, and written on them was Mrs. Joy's room. So that would have been installed at the time in which George and his wife, Louise, I think her name was, came to live. So he must have left Ballymena to come down to live down here, unless they used it just as a Dublin house.
Yeah.
But
that's interesting.
So that goes on to that period, and then we come on to they sold Joy family, whoever was here at the time, 1861, but it was done through the Landed Estates Court. The Landed Estates Court was set up because there was no proper deeds to the property at that time. And the Land Estates Court was set up in order to sell and prove ownership onto the next owner. And all those records are in the National Archives.
Yes.
And I was able to pull out quite a bit on information on the house, which some of these quite interesting descriptions about the house. And it describes it as being the lands are held in March 1728 by William Connolly, the manor of Rathfarnham.
Well, now we're able to go back into.
Yes, we're able to go back even further. So this was quite a bit. Then Lord Justice General and General Governor of Ireland to George Phillips for three lives renewable forever. And there's a whole description there in the Landed Estates Court and particulars, descriptive particulars, the domain, the mansion house of Woodtown, formerly the residence of the late Right Honourable Chief Baron Joy, who expended large sums of money in building a mansion house, stabling, etc., etc., etc. And even the area of the describes a little bit about the servants, the kitchen, bedroom, 11 bedrooms, outhouses, garden surrounded a wall. Now, on that, of course, Judge Joy himself was a keen arboriculturist, and he would have planted a lot of the trees initially up there.
A lot of them still there?
I'd say some of them are probably still there. This would have been 1830s. Some of the older trees up there, some very, very old trees, but unfortunately, of course, the chestnuts and beeches and that sort of thing that are probably planted later, they're beginning to see the end of their lives, and they're all getting blown down in storms, unfortunately. Now, in 1861, the Joy family had no further use for the house. I don't know why. I've never found out. And a chap called Patrick Bulfin bought. Patrick Bulfin was a greengrocer and wine merchant, Thomas Street. And he was a councillor and eventually became a Lord Mayor in June 1871 and died in his year of office, I suspect from overdrinking.
That would be
another wondrous thing to prove. I love these intricacies in family history, because that's what I've actually gone on to do now.
Yeah,
I'm doing family history, my parents' family, and also in the marshes.
But you'll find all kinds of little anecdotes, which will give you the real story and certainly padding to the history.
The Bulfin family were there for 45 years. Not necessarily Bulfin in name, but cousins and leased and rented by people related to the Bulfin family.
Yeah.
There's a name Eustace mentioned and what have you. And then from about 1875 onwards, it was leased first to a Dr. Robert Lyons, a surgeon, a Liberal MP for Dublin City. And then in 1892, to William Alexander, a solicitor. And from 1896 to 1912, it was leased, and this is a nice little story, to a Reverend W.A. Hill. Mm-hmm. Right? And he ran it as a preparatory school. Initially, Hill was a teacher at St. Columbus. And he lived there, obviously, in bachelor residence, because when he married, he was kicked out. They don't like married, or they didn't at that time, like married teachers. So he's kicked out. So we went over to England for a short while, and he heard and kept in touch, obviously, with Dublin, that there was a demand for preparatory schools, preparing boys for public school-run type schools, Columbus being the type. Columbus was run under English Boer public schools lines.
But that was the custom. If you were married, you couldn't continue
that's right,
teaching
career. And that's, I don't know. It might have been just St. Columbus's rules. I don't know. Anyway, perhaps the idea of having women of any kind running around the house was not beneficial for the boys.
It would be upsetting.
Upsetting, yes. Anyway, Hill decided to rent. He rented from the Bulfans, St. Columbus, and ran a school. We found evidence, and we still have it there, of a large cabinet, wardrobe, if you like, down in the basement, which had boys' names written on the shelves. So it was obviously used for storing linen or clothes belonging to the boys. Also, I found in the attic, when I was insulating it out, I think it was Latin or Greek prose with the name Hill written on it.
Well, yes.
I still have it somewhere in here. Yeah. he ran it as a school, a prep school, for, as I say there, for about, nearly 15 years, I would say. And
it was a privately run school.
Privately run school, yes. And I did meet one of the pupils that was there. He's since dead now, but he was the Guinness family. Owen Guinness, after Braddon.
And as a young lad,
he was a pupil there, and he went on to Columbus, and then he went on through into the army after that and everything. And he came back and lived at the area, lived in Braddon then, to Braddon House. And he was school. And unfortunately, when I didn't realise, when I found out that he had been at school there, he was very, very elderly and ill, and I would love to have gone to interview him.
Yes.
And found out a bit more about it. Mm. I don't know, his son Charles has just retired from being a teacher at Columbus, and I don't know whether he knows anything about it or not.
Yeah, but what a connection.
Yeah.
And what a link to find.
Oh yeah, there is various little dits of linkages between Woodtown and Columbus through the ages. All right. In fact, at one time, all the tenants up at Woodtown, mm-hmm. you all were past pupils of Columbus.
Were they?
At one time, yes.
Yes.
No, not now, but there were. There was a period there of about 5 or 6 years when they were all ex-Columbus. Mm. There's still a few there at the moment.
But it remained on as a school for 15 years.
Did, yeah.
And what happened to the house then?
The house then was taken over, was sold in February 16 to James McNeill.
Oh, James McNeill.
Right, now we're coming on to the Irish. He was a founder member of the Irish Volunteers. Okay? And one of the foremost Gaelic scholars in Europe at the time. And many of the leading figures involved in the Rising were visitors at the time, and including Pierce. And there's a lot of to and froing at that particular time.
A lot of meetings with
him. Oh, yes, in meeting the O'Reilly, and everybody were all up at Woodtown, what have you. In fact, I have some interesting little bits in there. And it was Ian, also, it was Ian, his brother, also shared the house with James. The two brothers shared the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Ian who wrote a letter to the press informing the volunteers not to come out at Easter.
Because
he didn't feel it was the right time to do it.
Isn't that interesting? So
it wouldn't be a total success.
Yes, and he was... has been written into history, that he was, at the last moment, worried about...
Yeah,
the outcome the Rising, 1916.
Yeah. And one of the unfortunate things is that people lost their lives about it. You know, the volunteers and supporters, mm-hmm. Pierce and all that, lost their lives over it. Whereas it could have been a total success if the volunteers had come out. But he didn't feel it. That's history now, and you can't go back on it. But anyway, a little things there which I found out from one of the McNeils that would have been... granddaughter, I think, of Ian, who came up to visit us one time and said, yes, we watched Dublin burn on Easter Sunday from the roof of Woodtown.
My goodness, yeah.
But there is a lot in the library, mm-hmm. which I haven't delved into, about Woodtown, about that period, 1621.
Yes, because he must have been drilling his volunteers there. They must have been... A lot of meetings carried out there. It was a very important
Woodtown was used as a training centre as well.
Yeah.
The Black and Tans raided the place several times, as we found out from one of the... We had a housekeeper who used to do work up for Mrs. Marsh, used to do work up there, and she remembers as a small girl the Black and Tans coming up.
During the War of Independence.
And there is a story that there used to be an outside toilet in the garden for the gardeners, and they used to dump all the arms down the toilet when they heard that Black and Tans were coming up. I haven't excavated it yet to find out.
But you probably will find lots I suppose, items associated with that.
Well, I haven't... I haven't found it, but we used to have pampas grass around the front there, and we periodically, every 5 or 6 years, we burn it to get fresh growth. And when we did it one year, we found telescopic sight in there.
Did you?
Indeed. But a telescopic sight didn't come into away after 1621, as far as I know.
Yeah, yes. But going back to the troubles, did you find any letters, any handwritten letters or anything like that underneath the floorboards or up in the attic?
No. I did go into the library, to the specialist section, the library upstairs, and asked one of the librarians about, because the... Owen McNeill's records, all his records, are split between UCD, where he was a lecturer, and the library. And I was wanting to delve into the library records, and they said, they're still in boxes. We haven't even delved through them yet. We're looking for volunteers to sort them all out. And I said, well, I want to find out a bit more about the family.
Yeah.
And they're living in the period 16 to 21 at Woodtown.
Yeah.
So that was... about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I just have to wait until they sort them out and I can go through them, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of information in there.
Oh, you will find that fascinating, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And moving on from there, then.
The events, then, of 1921, then, forced the McNeills to sell Woodtown Park. Okay? And to a Mr. Patrick Day.
Now, and who was Mr. Patrick
Day? Mr. Patrick Day was a horse dealer.
And where? Yes, you told me that earlier on. Where did he come from, though?
Somewhere around the South Circular Road somewhere. I'm not too certain exactly. My wife might know more about it. And the story goes that Patrick Day sent his wife up to Woodtown to view the place, okay? And report back if it was suitable. But she neglected to tell him, or he directly to tell him which Woodtown, because both Woodtowns were for sale at the time, right?
Oh, Guinness is across the way.
It wasn't Guinness at that stage, time, but it was. Yeah. They were both called Woodtown, you see. Well, Woodtown Park, and the other one, they decided to call themselves Woodtown Manor and Woodtown Park to differentiate between the two places. That was done at the time of the school to try and get sorted out there. When he found out he'd bought the wrong property, he was furious, and he never lived in a house. He never lived there, right? But he used the land.
His intentions then were not... he bought the wrong house, but it was to buy the house...
The smaller area of land with Woodtown Park, as there is with Woodtown Manor. Right, Patrick Day then. The McNeill sold Woodtown in 1921 to Patrick Day. Patrick Day, of course, was looking for the land to graze his horses. And he leased the house. For a while, we know, to one person in particular, a General Fitzpatrick Essay, from 1926 to 32. And he spent his time, his retirement up there, making saddles, I believe.
Making
horse saddles. Horse saddles. Yes. And tack for horses. I don't know why, but apparently there was some evidence when the Marshes moved up there of him having were drawings on some of the walls of saddles and what have you and things like that. And from people who knew him, they said that's what he did for the pastime. So
harness making.
Harness making, yeah. But after 1932, it was vacant.
Yeah.
Now, thinking about from memory now, Arnold was during the 30s a headmaster of Newtown School down in Waterford. He decided to retire. He was retiring slightly early, but he decided to retire, not too certain the exact reasons. And this was 1939. He was looking out for a place to be a caretaker, especially, to give him some sort of nice little income, which would be a supplement on his teaching pension, because his teaching pension was going to be very, very small, apparently. And he scouted around various houses, even Cassie Bourne over in Sligo, which is Mountbatten's old house, right? It was one of the places he went to visit. And he was walking up the hill to a place which he had been told about, a place called Woodtown, and he bumped into a fellow called Bulmer Hobson. Now, ring a bell with you.
It does indeed, yes.
Yeah. Now, Bulmer Hobson was Irish Volunteers, one of the founders of it.
Yeah.
He said to Arnold, because Arnold didn't know anything about that period at all, he said to Arnold, do you realise what house you're going up to? That's where McNeil used to live. I've been up to that house many, many times ago. Now, whether the two of them went up together or not, I don't know. But that is what Arnold told me, yeah. Anyway. And the house suited him. He could see the potential of dividing it up into flats.
Yeah.
To give himself a supplement income. That's basically what he was worried about. He had, at that stage, just married, I think, 2 or 3 years to Hilda Roberts, who was the art teacher at Newtown. So that's where they met.
I see, yes. So
Hilda Roberts was the art teacher down in Newtown.
Yeah.
And that's where they met. And Ethna is their only child. She was born in 1941. She's right. The only child. And
it's interesting, isn't it, the way that all those the house has so much memories, so many memories about so many different things that went on there down through the years.
Mm.
And if you like, you're continuing now, and at the moment the tenants still live in
they
the
do,
house.
yes, and people are wanting to come up and live with us, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, we're renovating one of the basement flats at the moment. We finished by the late summer.
Yeah.
And we have somebody to go into it.
Yeah.
When it's finished. We have another flat upstairs, a little bit of dry rot in it, as you expect with a house that age. The old timber lintels have gone, they have to be replaced, and we have somebody who rang me up only 2 weeks ago when I kind of move in. So there's no shortage.
And do you see yourself as a caretaker of this wonderful property? That will you always maintain it as long as you can?
Yes.
In the
well,
style that you
we have started. We're in the process now of passing it over to the children, my children, three children. We had a meeting, a family meeting. We decide, got them together, and they're saying, we, as parents, asked them, do you want to continue on Woodtown as it is? In other words, do we plough money into it? Because it badly needs some money ploughed into it. And they all agreed, yes, we want to continue it on, so that's what we're doing.
Well, that is an incredible story, a wonderful journey you took me
yeah.
through. And thank you very much for telling me that story, Peter Clark. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.